May 8, 2018. This is The Better Life. Not a whole lot to report today. I sat down to do the host monologue, and I thought. I got the little piece of paper in front of me with some notes. Not a whole lot on it. I haven't been to a casino since I got back from Gamblepalooza. I didn't get anything down on the Derby. In fact, I didn't even I forgot to watch it. I didn't get any action down. It's been kind of a slow week and a half for me in gambling. But I suppose with a hot and heavy week and a Gamblepalooza with just throwing chips around, getting down on games I wouldn't normally get down on, I think a little time, a little rest was in order. Looking forward to hopefully being in the blackjack tournament at MGM National Harbor. I believe it's not this coming weekend, but the next weekend. I have, you know, as many of you know, will not be at Zorkfest or Vegas Vacation because I will be in Europe, and I've been scouting a casino or two that I might slide into to check out while I'm over there. If anything, just add one more chip to the collection. But that's sort of what's going on in May. I think May is going to be a pretty calm month. Just get a tournament in, maybe visit a casino on a vacation, and that's about it. I have a Vegas vacation coming up in June, so I think it's May is worthy for some time off, with April having Gamblepalooza. June's going to have a Vegas vacation for myself, so looking forward to that. To address some things that went on in the podcasting space with Vegas and casinos and gambling, Vito threw a little shade my way, he felt a certain way about the way that I commented on the blackjack player at Gamble, or the blackjack dealer at Gamblepalooza. I want to defend myself a little bit, saying that I didn't have any like real disdain for the guy. I was uneasy about some of the things that he was saying, and I got over that pretty quickly because we were all experienced gamblers at the table. But I would thinking that this guy might be teaching some blackjack rookies that a jack is the second highest bust card for the dealer. That was a little weird. But I found it entertaining at the very least. Would I run back to his table? No. And that's probably where I differed from the way that that Vito and Mikey felt about it. If I was going back on the casino floor and there was space at his table and space at another table, I would definitely opt for the other table. I will agree, he was entertaining. But Vito, I have to admit, Vito, you kind of sounded like the guy that admires the guy that gets the magic trick right 25% of the time, and it's like, oh man, he's so good at this. I mean, he guessed his whole card every time, and he was right maybe one out of six times of the three, and he was only for the duration we were there, he was only right twice, right? So, I have to give Vito a hard time for that. And then Chris from Faces and Aces brought up a really interesting question. And there's some great questions being floated on podcasts lately. Then, and I think that we're all going to start hijacking some of them. Chris asked, you know, what scene from a Vegas movie from a Vegas scene would you want to reenact? And I've thought about this, and I've seen quite a bit of Vegas-themed shows. I guess I've seen more gambling shows, and those aren't always rooted in Vegas. But I think I have to agree with Adam. I think it was Adam Bauer who brought it up. The end scene in Ocean's 13, where all of the tricks and cheats are going on at once, and everybody in the casino is winning. That would be really cool to be a part of, especially when you just find out later, like, oh, I won because there was a major heist going on. That'd be, and I'm not even an accomplice. That's great. Or put me in just about any scene from the show Las Vegas, because all the women in that are gorgeous, and who doesn't want to be a part of that all the time? My wife's listening and shaking her head. Today's interview is with Eric Rosenthal. When I first heard of Eric Rosenthal, it was on the It was on You Can Bet on That, and they mentioned that Eric Rosenthal was the most famous podcaster who didn't actually have a podcast. And then, like, weeks later, he joined a podcast. He's from Vegas Confessions, is a show that he co-hosts. But Eric has made a name for himself when it comes to rewards and being able to take advantage of any opportunities there are to get a leg up on the casino or whatever rewards program that you're a part of, understanding how that system works, and even when you are sort of losing at an expected rate, still come ahead when it comes to what you're getting back in return, either from the casino or from your rewards program. So I brought Eric on to talk about his life in gambling, his approach, and then we get into some of the, I won't say we get in the weeds, but we get in some of the basics of rewards, dealing with the host, showing the casino who you are. And there's a big piece of advice that I hear every average gambler talk, or every average gambler say to other average gamblers, that Eric bucks, and it's a big one. It's one that I know that you've heard other gamblers say, and it's almost counterintuitive. So Eric will address that. So enjoy, Eric. I don't think the audience really knows, but this is the interview they've all been waiting for. This is it, the interview with Eric Rosenthal on The Better Life.
Wow. All right. That's a lot to live up to. Here we go.
Yeah. At least everybody that is listening, due to the association that I have with other podcasts in the Vegas and gambling space, maybe listeners that came over from maybe the sports writing realm maybe not be as familiar with you, but other people that listen to maybe Vito, You Can Bet on That, stuff like that, they're familiar with who you are. I know they're stoked, Eric.
All right. Well, I'm stoked to be here. Let's do it.
Good. So, Eric, let's start with the one thing that all of us gamblers have in common. One day we were exposed to gambling. How was that day for you? Do you remember that time?
Oh, my goodness. Do I remember that time? So, 1988, I'm 8 years old. I'm a Mets fan. The Dodgers just crushed my Mets. And my father says to me, do you want to put a bet on the World Series? $1, you pick whichever team you want. So I chose the Dodgers. They just beat my Mets, right? Oral Hershiser can't be touched. So I had a $1 bet as an 8-year-old with my father. And if you remember that World Series, when Kirk Gibson came up to hit and knocked one out, and now he's rounding the bases and he's pumping his fist as he's running around.
Right.
I'm doing that in my living room mocking my father. So not only was it my first gambling opportunity, it was also my first shit-talking opportunity, of which I took full advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember my father saying to me at the end of the series, you know, this may be the most expensive dollar you've ever won. And I didn't know what it meant then, but I might know now.
Yeah, I was man. Who was? What was it? I was watching just today. I was watching to Norm Macdonald talk about gambling stories, because apparently Norm Macdonald's a gambler, and he was talking to, I think, either Conan O'Brien or Larry King about gave the same sentiment that, like, winning is more detrimental to a gambler than losing, because you're not chasing that feeling again, right?
Right.
And I think a number of us have made that same sentiment in different ways on different shows. But so tell me, how, like, did you, at such a young age, did you find more ways to gamble, or did you have to wait a while to get that experience again?
No, I didn't have to wait at all. So, shortly after that, we're originally from Brooklyn, and playing gin rummy for money was very common, which then turned into pinochle for money, which then turned into a weekly poker game.
Pinochle for money.
Pinochle, absolutely. Are you kidding me?
I'm just. The name of the game is what makes it sound funny.
So my father and my grandfather were both gamblers, and you know they would teach me along the way. I wouldn't say we were playing cards for money when I was eight, but it probably wasn't too much later than that.
So then, tell me when does Eric Rosenthal enter his first casino?
Oh, I think I'm about 16, 17, the first time I went down to Atlantic City with a couple of friends.
Now, this is the story of that involves number 33. Is that correct?
That wasn't my first time.
Not the first time. Okay.
That was also underage. That was at Sands, which is no longer in Atlantic City.
Right.
So
that first time in, did you go? What were you playing back then?
So I believe when I went in, I think it was just slot machines. I was afraid to approach a table. I've always looked older than I am, but. If I was 16, 17, if memory serves me, I don't think I felt confident enough to approach a table at that time. So my best guess, this I don't remember accurately, but I would guess slot machines.
Yeah, no, the confidence is in you weren't confident you'd get away with it, or you weren't confident
right.
in – oh, okay.
Oh, no. I could have played at that point in time. It was could I get away with it.
Eric. Oh, I'd definitely play it. Sweep them up. So what let's you know, you can mention any part of your life between then and now that you want, but what games of choice have sort of have you always had one or two games of choice? Has it evolved from era to era? How does your approach to casino gaming go now?
So I've largely been a blackjack player most of my, gambling career, if that's what we're going to call it.
Yeah, we'll call it a career.
Sure. Just to be clear, I'm not an AP. I'm not a professional gambler. So,
calling it a career makes it sound less degenerate.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it does. So blackjack has always been my game of choice. In the last 5 years, I've picked up craps and pie gow poker as two others that I enjoy quite a bit.
Oh, so you just recently picked up craps.
I learned craps from Mark Duvall
three years
ago at VIMF when he held a, you know, let me teach you how to play craps at Golden Gate. And I was just, you know, there to watch, and it looked like fun. And Mark Duvall taught me how to play craps.
Interesting. And the reason why I find it interesting is Eric, you know, you and I have only known each other for a few months now, if that, right?
Right.
And the limited exposure that I've had of you, I would guess that you've been an experienced gambler around the casino in multiple games. So what kept you from? Were you just not interested in it? Were you intimidated by it? Were you just wasn't? Yeah, what took you so long? I guess that's the question.
I love to squeeze cards. There's something about it. So I don't want to say it didn't interest me, but I already, you know, they already offered what I was there for. And I didn't have any friends that played craps. Everybody that I hung around with was either a poker player or a blackjack player. And there's no way to beat craps. So, you know, as much fun as I have with it now, I know you may have some people that believe in dice influence, and I'm not going to engage in that debate. But there's no way for me to beat craps in the long term, right? So unless there was somebody who showed me how to play and I saw that it was a good time and, you know, it's a communal game, we can all have fun, you know, then I'm there for entertainment. It's a different type of gamble altogether.
Okay. So when you were playing blackjack, were you counting?
I mean, I play blackjack. I know how to count 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know,
Yeah. So what you're saying is you played long enough to understand the arithmetic of the game. Okay.
Oh, you know what? Since you brought up, you know, like, you know, beginning childhood kind of gambling stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I was counting, but when I was like as a child, it had dawned on me, you know, there's only 52 cards in a deck.
Yeah.
Right. So like the let's call it applied math of, you know, the constitution of a deck and what that means when you play like that, you know, that just came naturally to me.
Right.
So, you know, that's why I've always stuck with cards. You know, it's there's an inherent advantage in being able to know basically what's been played, what hasn't been played.
Sure.
And most people don't spend any time learning that. And that's, you know, that's a huge deal.
Absolutely. Let's talk about 2018 Eric Rosenthal, the guy that has this year or this this life of playing blackjack, recently learned a couple other games that he may like playing socially. If you're in a casino by yourself, are you still gravitating to the blackjack table?
It's unlikely I'm in a casino by myself.
Okay.
But it should that situation arise, then yeah, I'm going to default to blackjack.
Okay. So then what gets you into a casino then? That's probably the best follow-up there. What gets you into a casino?
It's going to be one of two things. Either it's going to be other people that I want to spend time with, or there's going to be some form of promotion or offer where the math makes sense that I should be there.
Okay. And I know, most people that are familiar with you are familiar with how well you manage rewards programs and understand how to position yourself for the best return on those. How much time are you spending looking into this stuff, or is it so second nature now you can quickly look at something and know whether it's worth your time or not?
It's all about networking. So I don't spend very much time at all now, but I have enough friends that do similar things where, you know, we kind of just take a look at our own local market. And frankly, I mean, the internet, you know, before we even do the math, half the time, you know, there's somebody already talking about it.
Yeah.
So I'm not unique in any way, shape or form. There's a lot of people out there that do it. Just most people don't want to talk about it. Because obviously the more you talk about it, the less likely the deal is to last.
Sure.
Right. So there's certainly people more skilled than I in that regard. But just like counting down a deck becomes almost second nature, it's the same thing, whether it's comps or it's the program or it's the promotion. You can see when there's an overlay, you could see it coming. So, you know, you have to spend a little bit of time and figure out what the math looks like, but, you know a good deal coming before you even sit down and put pencil to paper.
Do you think that the, so how long have you been doing this? How long have you, and you can even go far back as like the first time you took interest, or you can shorten that on like how long you've been doing it sort of, I don't want to say professionally, but where it's become a regular thing for you. How long have you been into the rewards, the promotions, the kickbacks, et cetera?
About 5 years. 2013 is when things really started to take shape for me. I shared the story on the Do for a Win podcast, so I don't know how much level of detail you want me to go through for your listeners.
I do not know how much of my audience I share with Do for a Win, so go ahead and get into it as much as you'd like.
Okay. So being New Jersey-based, Atlantic City is my local spot. And as the Revel was starting to fall apart, really. I mean, it was a death spiral. They came out with different promotions that were there to entice gamblers to come in. And they offered one program called You Can't Lose, and they were going to rebate up to $100,000 in slot losses.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Look, you don't have to be a genius to understand there's something there.
Well, okay. But there were a lot of terms and conditions and hoops to jump through.
Sure.
But this is where, you know, I knew I needed assistance, and I knew there was money to be made. So, you know, I started calling some of my friends, and I had one of my buddies is an attorney, and I had him, you know, speak with the host and get all the details in writing. And, you know, there were lawsuits over this because it, you know, they really didn't make it easy, but, I was really in a spot where I could handle all of the terms and conditions and still make a play for it. So we went down on the last day of the promotion. It basically lasted, I don't remember what the months were, but, you know, let's say they gave you from July 1st through the end of August. I don't remember the exact dates, but we went down on the last day with a large pooled bankroll, and we were either going to hit it big or we were going to lose it big. There wasn't going to be any middling. And we lost big. We lost really, really big. And really, really fast. We used the $100 Wheel of Fortune machine, and a lot of money disappeared very, very quickly. But everything went in under my card.
Right.
Right. So what happened was we basically took advantage of the You Can't Lose rebate. Additionally, casino marketing started sending me just tremendous offers to bring me back in. At that point, I realized that the marketing department, the hosts that I were dealing with, and, you know, this specific promotion, you know, the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, because it was very clear to anybody who looked at my play history there, this was not my standard play, and I was there for the promotion. But it didn't stop them to, you know, they were offering me $2,000 to come back in several times a month in free play, not in cash. But, you know, when you give me the lost rebate and you're going to give me $2,000 at a clip to come back in, I can do that math too. And I know that there's money to be made there.
Yeah.
So that one promotion started everything, because once we figured out that, you know, there were ways to take advantage of the different facets of casino marketing, we did some homework and we spent time and energy and put forth effort to learn how to do it and who can we contact and who can help us. And to this day, there's a small group of us that we will get together from time to time and, you know, have a great time at the casino's expense. And it does not mean that we don't lose money in the casino. We absolutely do. But the value received relative to the expected loss is always in our favor.
Yeah. And I think that's the part of this. And what's the guy's name? Ruben, right?
Max Ruben.
Comp City. Yeah.
Yes.
That, you know, I still recommend that book through principle at, you know, through just principle, right? Like I tell people, mm-hmm. if you read the book, maybe it's, you know, the systems don't work exactly the way it should, or exactly the way they did when he wrote the book, but the principles are the same, the concepts are the same, the mindset of understanding what you're giving up to the casino for what they're potentially going to give you back is in your Correct. Favor if you look at if and it's always important to know, Eric, and I think this is and how do you how do you make sure you're getting what you want from the casino, if that makes sense? Like, not everybody, like, to some people, not every comp is, you know, not every comp's the same, right? Like, a buffet sure. may be a big deal to somebody, right? Not, and, like, eating for free is a big deal to a lot of people. But if you're not someone who spends a lot of money on food or anything anyways, then maybe that comp isn't that big of a deal. How do you navigate that?
So it's completely subjective. I believe it's important that you value everything that you're receiving based on what you would be willing to pay for it, not what the, you know, assumed retail value is.
Yeah.
And everybody has different wants. So a lot of this is subjective, and everybody has to make that determination on their own. You can figure out what the expected value is of you know, what you have to do, the amount of coin in or the amount of time at the table, so far, so forth. Is what you're getting in return or what you expect to get in return worth that expected loss?
So people understand, especially people who aren't slot or video poker players, when you say coin in, mm-hmm. You're not just talking about the money that I'm inserting into the machine. You're talking about when I hit the button, how much money is then being wagered on that event.
Correct. Right? The cumulative wagered amount.
Right. So if I started with $100 in credits mm-hmm. and played for an hour and ended with $100 in credits, that whatever was – how much ever credits were played over that course of time is what my coin in is.
Correct.
Right. Can you provide an example – and if you can't, that's fine. But can you provide an example of maybe a past promotion that you don't – there isn't around anymore, so you're not maybe blowing up a spot or anything that would serve as a decent example of what this would look like?
Okay. So the deal was just killed in Las Vegas. So this is kind of a good one.
Okay.
A lot of times when we're looking at arbitrage opportunities, we look to see where cash equivalents can be used. So total rewards used to allow you to purchase total reward, gift cards, and that counted as spend. And then you could then spend the total reward gift card, which would then double your spend in that moment. Now, the key there is that Total Rewards offers daily tier bonuses based upon a certain amount of play and or spend, and they pooled together. And it took a little bit of massaging, but there are actually places throughout the country where a Total Reward gift card could be used to then purchase a different type of cash equivalent, which could then be turned right back into cash, and you pay off your credit card, and maybe you use the total reward credit card to buy it in the first place and earned 5x points on that. There was no money at risk. There were no fees involved. It just required kind of moving the money from your right pocket to your left pocket back to your right pocket and capturing the spread every step of the way. That deal is since dead. They have fixed that. So
enough Eric Rosenthal's in the world. Fuck that up, everybody.
Well, you know, there's a really we'll leave it at that. That's fine.
Sorry.
You know, when we were promoting Zorkfest last year. I was on Vito's show and I was on a couple of other shows, and I was talking about it. You could really be 7 stars without gambling a dollar.
Yeah.
And I heard a lot of people say, bullshit, you don't know what you're talking. Okay, I don't know what I'm talking about. That's fine.
Yeah. You know, that's something that I've learned in the gambling world is people are just so quick to call out BS if they don't understand something, right? Or you know, if they don't understand the nuances that's for another show. So tell me, there's 40 states with casinos now, right? Four-fifths of this nation have operating casinos in their state. Will the, you know, sports betting is hopefully and probably going to get legalized at yep. least in the state of New Jersey, if not the country, this year. And with the expansion of that, with the expansion of more states accepting gambling, with online gambling starting to get a little bit of a resurgence, does this expansion and growth of casinos and gaming, is this going to help and create more of these opportunities, or will it just create a smarter industry that will keep their situations tight?
No, there's going to be more and more opportunity. Okay. Sometimes you have to look a little bit harder. You're not going to see, I would imagine you're not going to see, you know, those huge promotions like $100,000 loss rebate, things of that nature.
Right.
But there are mistakes made all the time. I mean, all the time. It just takes having a network of people where, you know, you can figure out what's worth your time and energy to, I hate to say exploit, because nobody's really exploiting. We're following the terms and conditions.
Taking advantage of, and that's a decent way of saying it. You're taking advantage of a good situation. Yeah,
sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Just like if when bookmakers put up a bad line, right, you take advantage mm-hmm. of it. You know,
it's absolutely.
You're not doing anything wrong. You're just, they made a mistake on their side, and you're taking advantage of it. Just how, like, you know what? They'll take advantage of when you walk up and take a bad line, right?
Sure.
Or mm-hmm. take a line that's in their favor. So, and casino, and that's all over the casino, right? I don't know if, and going back, I know that there's only so much you really wanted to get into this, because, like, the more people talk about it, the more it deads these opportunities. But this is the Better Life. People listening to this are into gaming of some sort, and that means they probably frequent a casino. If they mm-hmm. go to a new casino, or a new casino gets built around their place or something like that, or they see a promotion, what's maybe the principle or just a couple things to, like, keep in mind when evaluating a program to see if there is something to take advantage of?
Okay, so in general, when a new place opens up, assuming you don't have play at a sister property, you're a blank slate to that casino. And the casino only knows what you tell them about you. Okay? So when you're using your player's card, that's them tracking you and you telling them basically, you know, this is who I am and this is what you can expect. So any promotion that comes up where you are, I'll call it a virgin card to that casino, you want to make sure that in that scenario, you're prepared to give them substantially higher play than you normally would. And it's really, really important. Catherine, she goes by Coach Kitty at TravelZork. She actually wrote a really good article on this. Basically, any of these promotions that you find that are worthwhile, that's exactly the opportunity to become a new player at a new casino and go in with double, triple, quadruple, and it doesn't have to be your money. You can, you know, pool resources with other people to make it work. Go in hard. And you're going to find that in addition to the promotion that is being offered, the bounce back as well as the future mailers that you're going to get are going to be substantially higher. Casinos reinvest in players at two times, really. When you're a brand new player and they want to get you hooked and bring you back, or when you haven't been there for a long time and they think they need to offer you more to you know, bring you back into the fold.
Sure.
Right. So everywhere in between, they're looking to kind of, I don't want to say lowball you, but they're trying to figure out what's the least we can offer you to get you back in.
So, and I'm sure this question comes to mind for me. I'm sure other people as well. Mm-hmm. Something opens up. I want to do what you just said, go in there and give them more action than I normally would. What's the floor on attractive action? Like, do I need to be a green chip player? Does it need to be closer to a buck? Like, what kind of play as a new player is going to, and at the average casino, you don't, obviously MGM is different from the tribal casino, stuff like that. But just in general, what's going to get them to raise their eyebrows and have their system say, yeah, no, we want this guy back?
Well, That's gonna vary.
Sure.
Completely, right? So I don't think there is an answer specifically to that question.
And the reason why I ask is because we mentioned Comp City earlier, and he talks about being a $25 player, and I wonder if that still holds up because many players are, you know, so it does not hold up.
No, well, you have to remember when the book was written.
Right. Well, I guess the reason why I was wondering if it held up is because there are so many players that play table minimums below that. That I was wondering if the average still held around that much. So you're saying you probably want to get closer to being a $50-$100 player to get some attention.
I'm suggesting that whatever your normal play is that would yield you X, if you go in heavier than you would normally go in, it will yield you Y, and Y will be better than X.
All right. Algebra, okay. Baby. Algebra from Eric Rosenthal.
All right. And it will last usually 3 to 6 months. So there is this residual effect even after you're kind of dropping back down to your normal average. You're going to reap the benefits for a while. And those benefits are defined as more than what you would normally get.
Sure.
And right. So being a black chip player is better. Being larger than a black chip player is even better. But it can happen in other ways. You know, if you're normally a 1 to 2 hour player and you play at the same stakes, but you give them 8 hours, that's the same thing. Essentially.
Oh, okay.
All right. So
that's going into daily theoretical.
Right. Yeah. Right. So your average daily theoretical is what you're worth to the casino. Okay. So that is what the marketing offers are based on. So anywhere that you play, they have a number based upon X amount of trips over, you know, Y number of months. That this is really what you're worth to them. Avoiding any play that will lower your average will continue to garner the best comps available. And once you get into there's a little bit of social engineering with hosts and things of that nature. You have to be able to arm them with what they need to give you what you want.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So they always have a boss. They don't own the casino. So there needs to be something that you're doing, and you know this kind of comes with learning property by property and host by host what they can do for you and what they're willing to do and how forthright they are and what they need to see. You can get, you know, some properties offer a substantial amount of discretion to hosts. Some properties offer none whatsoever. Right.
Yeah, well, Eric, I'm be respectful of your time while also trying to get as many follow-up questions as I can because the insight that you have is fascinating. And I know everybody wants to enjoy more of their casino experience and more of their gaming experience, and what we're talking about plays into that. If I went to a property, someone listening to this probably just went to a casino 3 months ago and lowballed, right? Someone played the minimums or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're hearing this and they're like, oh, I ruined an opportunity. How do I reset my reputation with a property?
Stay off the radar. Either don't go in, or if you go in, don't play with your card.
Okay.
You know, that the absolute worst advice that's handed down from average gambler to average gambler is always use your player's card.
Yeah.
Right? That has... So what I'm talking about now has nothing to do with being a refusal for identity purposes. It just has to do with sometimes I go to a casino and I hang out with my friends and I have a couple of drinks and we hang around a table that is much lower than my average limit. They don't need to know that I'm there.
Gotcha.
The $2 in comps that I would earn by playing at that low level is not worth the hundreds or maybe thousands of dollars it can cost me over the next 6 months.
Sure. So you're saying if I'm playing a green chip at a blackjack table and want to go play craps with my friends at a $5 table, just to leave the card in the pocket and just enjoy
the
game.
Keep the card in your pocket. Yeah. You know, in that situation, you're probably picking up 18 cents in comps.
Yeah.
And it makes you seem like a smaller player.
Yep. Okay. A couple of random questions. marker versus wiring to a cage, is there a difference in what and how the casino views me as a player, or how I handle it at the table?
Not really. In either situation, you're going to draw a marker. In the traditional marker sense, you have check cashing privileges, where basically, you know, they call it credit. It's not really credit. They'll float you up to X number of days based upon how much you draw or based upon your line, but it's really check cashing privileges.
Yeah.
When you wire money in advance, then the money is in the cage and you're drawing against the money that is in the cage. So there's not really a big difference unless you're looking to set up a relationship in a new property and you, as a bargaining chip, want to make sure that you show that you mean business. You know, wiring a large amount of money to a casino does get the host's attention.
Yeah.
But in my experience, you know, unless you're playing at a super high level, you can get a marker for the same amount. Because it's in your checking account.
Right. How do I handle that marker at the table to maximize my reputation with the host?
So it's at the table. It's going to have nothing to do with the host.
Or with the casino, I mean.
With the casino, you know, when you're drawing a marker, and if you're drawing a larger marker, it's going to draw a little bit of attention. At all table games, you know, the math on what your rating looks like is generally – it's not exact. I'll leave it at that. So if you have the pit boss's attention and he's watching you and he's there because, you know, he's got to take care of your marker, you know, that would be a good opportunity to maybe show larger bets because that's what's going to be recorded. You kind of have the ability to draw attention when you need to, when you call for a marker. I would say the advantage is, I don't want to say negligible, but it's not, you know, this isn't going to change the world kind of stuff. Because if you show them a $500 bet and then regress down to a quarter, you know, they're going to know. But if you went from, you know, you're normally a $100 or $200 player and now you're showing $400 or $500, well, that can change the average and it gives you a little bit more arsenal, I guess, if he's seen the larger bet when you ask at the end of your session, and you should always ask at the end of your session, what did you have me at? And if you don't agree with the number, and I never agree with the number. you can't agree with the number. You have to make sure you're tipping the dealers and you smile and you say, actually, I think it was more like, and throw out a larger number. And more often than not, if you are friendly, you're, you know, taking care of the dealers, your rating can be increased quite a bit just based on your asking.
Yeah. One thing that This isn't a perfect way of doing this, but something that I have noticed in the way that I play is when I'm playing the don't, right? I think it's when there's a lot of chips on the table. I don't, and you see like the pit boss go up and start tapping and looking around who's betting what. I don't think they can tell who's exactly has how much on the table, right? And I have noticed that. If I'm playing an average of 2 or 3 points, that I can make a case that I was playing closer to 4, and they don't argue, right? Like, so, like, you know, so if I'm if they have me at 75, it's easy for me to make a case for 100. Like, what do you think? I had 4 points, like an average of 4 points when playing the don't, and they, you know, what are they gonna do? Try to prove me that I didn't.
You know, generally speaking, if you're a good guy and you know,
I also tip the dealers. That probably helps too.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, for big picture, long-term thinking, get used to tipping. That, I mean, and you don't have to be a huge tipper. They just need to know that they're appreciated. Yeah. You know, the pit boss used to be a dealer.
Right.
So it goes a long way. And even if you're, not really a big tipper by nature, think of it as a cost of doing business as to what you're going to yield in the future.
Yeah. Eric, I told you a half an hour. I told my wife a half an hour, going a little over the projected time. So I do apologize for keeping you around so long.
No, I'm good.
Good. And my wife is tolerant of this, so she's good too. The last question I have with this, and I could go on for hours. So I'll ask one more question here, and then I'll bring it back on. I'm sure you're willing to come talk more
sure.
of this and,
yeah.
and whatever you're comfortable with. Dealing with a host.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm new, what's the right way to frame this? I think a lot of people assume that getting a host is something that the casino finally offers to you. And I'm sure that there is a way to be more proactive on getting a host so long as you're able to back that up. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Don't ever wait for the casino to find you.
Yeah. So that's what I'm curious about is what, you know, if there's a new casino opening up or just one I haven't been to before, you know, and I want to talk with the host, what am I telling them to ensure that I'm getting interest from them before going to there without setting myself up for possibly embarrassing myself with underplaying or something like that?
Right. So I'm not telling, I'm asking. So
okay.
So I want to know, and you know, I have a short list of things that I'm expecting from a casino for my play. So I'm asking what it is that they look for in order to be able to offer these things. I'm also bold enough to ask them how they're compensated, because sometimes you can do other things that make you a profitable player for the host, even if your play isn't at the level that would be required.
Ooh, do you have an example for that?
Sure. So referring other players to a host goes a long way.
Oh, yeah.
If they're paid based on, you know, the overall there's a bunch of different ways that hosts are paid, and there's different types of hosts. But having a general understanding of what will make you seem like a great guide to them, that's what you want to learn. And then it's up to you, based upon those answers, if it's worth it to you. For me personally, I can probably size up a host in about 3 to 5 minutes to figure out if this is somebody I want to work with, because they're not all good is the
yeah.
right. That's in any profession, not everybody's good. And you might have to kiss a few toads to find a good one. But you want somebody who can tell you exactly what it is that they want. And, you know, there's a lot of bullshit out there where people can't, you know, they pretend they can't tell you, or maybe it's just that they don't know. They're, you know, they may be relatively new. But an experienced guy who has been around the block a couple of times, if you're direct with him, you can find out from him or her exactly what it is that they're looking for in order to give you these, you know, for me, you know, what I'm looking for you, what you're looking for.
Yeah. And what, I'm just cold calling the casino asking for to be connected to a host?
Always look for a referral.
Oh, so
always your gambling network is so important to you.
Oh, interesting.
So important to you. You know, one of the things about Zorkfest and things like that, where I think people are foolish if they don't just attend the cocktail party or something like that. You need people who can help you get to where you want to be.
Yeah.
And if you wanted, I guess it doesn't matter what you want. If you want X and you're going to cold call a host and he can't see rated play to verify it, he's probably not going to offer it to you up front. But if I have a play history with him and I call my host and I say, hey, listen, this Lawson guy is a good guy. He'll give play, you know, do me a favor and reach out to him, talk to him. They'll extend it on the front end, usually.
Okay.
Because somebody has already vouched for you.
I like that. Eric, we have a fun little game we play here. Mm-hmm. Hard segue into our fun little game here. bet your life on it. Eric, you're not actually going to bet your life on it. It's okay. No one's coming for you, Eric. you listen to the show. You are well aware of what the question is. For anybody who's new to this, I'm going to ask Eric a question. I'm going to give him two options. He's going to choose which one he wants. Hypothetically, in a bizarre world, if he loses his bet, he loses his life. But if he wins the bet, he's granted an entire second lifetime. Not twice as long of a life, because who wants to be like 160 years old, right? You get an entire second lifetime. Eric, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, in their prime, who are you putting your life on?
Can you tell me what round it ends in? Because if it ends in the third round, I'm going to go with Tyson. But unless you tell me it's going to end real early, because that was a wicked uppercut that man has.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're going to tell me it's some freak connection like that, I got to go Ali. There's no I don't know. Maybe you'll answer my question. What round does it end in?
Well, I feel like I'm answering it for you if I tell you. Let's say it ends in round 9.
Ali.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing. If you take Ali, I think you sweat the first 5 rounds, right?
You do. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's something that that really doesn't go – that hasn't been discussed yet is round by round. Everybody's been either definitely Ali or I'll take the puncher's chance with Tyson. But I think those are two – that's a first half versus second half thing, right,
where
you think it's going to end. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, it's always a pleasure talking to you, sir. And when I say always a pleasure, I mean in the 5 times we've spoken to each other, each time has been absolutely wonderful. I was a little disappointed we could spend a little bit more time at Gamblepalooza, but I know you had things going on. Unfortunately, we will not see each other in May, but it does sound like we may see each other in June. It sounds like there's an Atlantic City thing possibly happening. Isn't Julian coming out for...
He is. Yeah. So Julian is my one of the co-hosts of Vegas Confessions. And the date seems to be in flux. It appeared to be early June. Now it's looking late June. I'm trying to convince him to just hold off a little bit longer because Hard Rock and now Ocean, they're both saying June 28th, the floor will be open. So, I think that's in the works.
Okay, very well. Well, I hope to see you then, sir. And you just mentioned Vegas Confessions. Tell our people where they can listen to it and why they should listen to it.
So, I guess any podcast app where wherever you can find The Better Life, I'm pretty sure you can find Vegas Confessions.
I'm sure that's right. Yeah, I'm not sure why I phrased the question that way, but...
No, that's good. Because if they're already listening to us, they already know what a podcast is, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And why they should listen. You know, we're kind of like the Cheers of the we're kind of like the Cheers of the Vegas / gambling casino, whatever community we're in here. It's a fun, friendly show. I don't think we ever get into anything super intellectual. It's really just fun. And if you want to easy listen and have a few laughs, then come check us out.
Easy listen with a few laughs, I think, is actually a great way to describe it. That's definitely one of the reasons why I enjoy it. Eric Rosenthal, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your time. And I can't wait for our next opportunity to hang out with each other, sir.
Very good. I feel the same way.
Again, big thanks to Eric for joining me. Zorkfest coming up. Podcasters After Dark, sponsored by The Better Life. Couldn't be more excited to support such a cool event. Disappointed that I will not be there, but with the time difference, I think I'll actually be able to watch. I think I'll just be able to get up a little early from where I am and enjoy a cup of coffee while watching Podcasters After Dark. Maybe my mom to watch. We'll see. But I have seats. I have 2 tickets to Podcasters After Dark. If you are someone who is going to be in Las Vegas over Memorial Day weekend and you want to attend Podcasters After Dark, but you will not be attending Zorkfest, I have tickets that I'll be giving out. It's going to be a lottery system. So if you are following me on Twitter @TheBetterLife, tweet at me and be like, hey, I want in on those tickets. I'm giving these out like next week, probably before next week's show airs. I'll probably make my decision on where these tickets are going. So on Twitter, hit me up at The Better Life. Like, hey, I want those Podcasters After Dark tickets. If you are a Patreon subscriber, at the time that I do the lottery, you will have 3 entries into the lottery versus 1 for anybody else that has pinged me saying that they want in. So if you want in, patreon.com/thebetterlife, you can kick me, you can pledge as little as $1 and have that advantage of having 3 tickets in the lottery. If no one claims them, I'm just giving them away. I have plenty of friends in Vegas that would enjoy this, and I will hit them up to see if they are interested. So if you're a listener and you're interested in these tickets, ping me on Twitter, pledge on Patreon, and get a part of the lottery for the giving away of these tickets. That wraps up this episode. Appreciate everybody for listening. I know you enjoyed my conversation with Eric Rosenthal. We're back next Tuesday with another great episode.